Well, hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope. Glad you could be with us today. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. My guest today is John Kennedy. John has a forthcoming book called Zombie Thinking, Why We Do What We Do and How to Improve It. John has worked with the Marine Corps. He's worked in the field of helping people with PTSD. He's got some very highly successful techniques in handling the issues and hurdles that we hit in our life, and I think you're going to enjoy this discussion today. So we'll be back right after this with John Kennedy. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Hey, write me. Let me know how you're doing. Got a suggestion for the show? I'd like to hear that too. Always catch me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com, MathersRodney at yahoo.com. Let me know how you're doing, okay? Well, hey, everybody, and welcome back. My guest today is John Kennedy. John is the author of a forthcoming book called Zombie Thinking, Why Do We Do What We Do and How to Improve It? Okay, I think I got that right. Now, John, you're going to talk to us about the brain today. Now, before we get into that, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure, Rodney. Yeah, this has been an incredible journey the last 10 years. We really delved into the brain and how it works and how we can use that knowledge to help people. My background actually was process re-engineering as a consultant. Had nothing to do with the brain. It was all about improving processes. So we helped organizations, big companies, you know, determine the most efficient processes, rebuild them, you know, create more efficient systems. If your listeners are old enough to remember Y2K, it's probably the biggest project I oversaw was the Y2K transition from Motorola PCS, obviously with a very firm deadline. So process efficiency was critical. And that deadline wasn't going to move, right? So I was very happy doing this until 2006. My brother came back from Iraq and said IEDs, the improvised explosive devices, roadside bombs, sometimes people call them, are killing us. Can you help? And so my hypothesis was, maybe there's a way that I could apply what I knew about process improvement to the brain using neuroplasticity as the medium. Now, neuroplasticity was just starting to get a lot of attention about 10 years ago through better brain scanning. But what they realized was that our brains change based on the stimulation that we give it. That's a source of our habits. It's a source of what we call muscle memory. It's a source of how we perform in every area of our life. So I actually talked the Marines into giving me an opportunity, and they ended up giving me a contract to try this out with a platoon of Marines. This is 10 years ago. And so during the course of the first pilot, we developed different exercises that targeted different parts of executive function. By making those areas more efficient, the results were pretty amazing. The first group we had a chance to work with for this experiment, I asked for the worst platoon in the battalion, and they had a lot of trauma. And again, it's probably you can relate to some of your audience as well. 16 guys had lost a cycle before from post-traumatic stress disorder and IEDs and a helicopter crash. They're performing very poorly in all their pre-deployment objectives. And we embedded, we developed the exercise, worked through them, and 3 months later, not only were they the best performing platoon in the battalion, but when they went through their final pre-deployment training in California, the instructor said it was the best performance she'd ever seen. So we then took that and integrated into other classes, scouts, snipers, squad leaders, and so forth. And then over the last 10 years, we've really just kind of continued to customize it and realize that anybody with a brain, which is most people,
most
can
people.
Benefit.
even me.
Faster, yeah, even you, exactly.
So,
exactly.
Okay, I think you already touched on this, but let's get a good definition of what neuroplasticity is. It's the, I think you said it's something about the memory that's embedded into our brain. Tell us what that is.
Actually, neuroplasticity really deals with the physical changes our brains
physical
make based
change.
On stimulation.
Okay.
And actually, our physical and our brains change to the day we die. And so the things that we do, and this is, I mean, when you start to look at the world from the perspective of neuroplasticity, you start to see the patterns that develop. You know, someone, for example, who grows up in a poor environment, poor family models, they tend to model that behavior.
Right.
If you want to get yourself better and stronger. Now, the encouraging thing is, I don't know about your listeners, but, you know, Romans 12:2 says, the guide says, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, right? So it's very positive, but we can renew our minds. We can make tremendous changes and improvements in our lives. Mm-hmm. And the fact that God says we can do that, I find very positive. And so some of the people I work with, kids with learning disabilities, people with severe brain trauma that get better, they get their brains renewed, mm-hmm. Is all very, very positive. And that's all through neuroplasticity. It's the type of stimulation we give it. You know, if someone sits around all day long, you know, watching TV, they're not stimulating their brains, it's not going to grow and get better.
Mm-hmm.
A person that's actively engaging their brains are going to improve.
Okay, so what kinds of things do you tell your readers and my listeners to do to increase that stimulation? What would be some specific, I don't want you to give your book away, but some specific things that people can do to help themselves along these lines?
Well, one of the things I say sometimes, that in fact, we recently did a talk on this, is to keep in mind, always do hard things, right? Mm-hmm. If we always take the easy route, our brains actually are basically lazy. So if you do the same thing over and over again the same way, that forms a rut, and that's how we're going to do it. But you want to continually challenge yourself and do harder things.
Okay.
Now, one of the concepts we use is something neuroscientists call a zombie system, which is basically a conscious process that the brain is offloaded to be an unconscious process. It's like a habit, but at a very deep level. And one example of this is the first time you ever learned to drive a car, right? I mean, here you are trying to steer this 2,000-pound, you know, monstrosity down the street without hitting anybody.
Right.
You know, my daughter's learning how to drive now, so we're trying to teach her. And so there's a lot of cognitive overhead uh-huh. involved in just a very simple driving. But now you drive, you don't even think about it. You can talk to the person next to you, look out the window. Mm-hmm. But it's the same amount of mental effort. It's just that the brain has made it a zombie system, so you don't have to think about it. Now, from our perspective, and that's really the basis for our book, is there's different levels of zombie thinking. There are procedural levels, and this is something to be aware of. When you practice something over and over again, you get better at it, right? Now, the problem is you could do the bad thing over and over again, and you're going to get better at doing the bad things. But the good things that you want to work are procedurally based. So whether it's throwing a baseball, learning how to read, driving a car, whatever you do, when you repeat it over and over again at a procedural level, it becomes a zombie system, and you get better at it without thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Now, the second level of the zombie system is the psychological level, how we feel about ourselves. Right? If you give yourself positive self-talk and feel good about yourself, you're going to perform better and feel better. If you continuous negative self-talk, you're going to feel worse. Now, those kind of align to the levels of processing in a computer, right? So the procedural level of zombie thinking is kind of like the applications on your computer.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, you know, upgrade your games, but it doesn't necessarily going to improve your other software. So you can become the best pitcher in the world. Doesn't mean you can do anything else better. The psychological system is kind of like the operating system of your computer. But, as you know, the best way to improve all parts of your computer is to get a new one because it's got a faster processor.
Mm-hmm.
We call that the foundational level of zombie thinking, and that's where we primarily focus. And we found that by making the brain work progressively harder doing something simple, that whole thinking process becomes more efficient. And when your thinking process is more efficient, you think faster with more focus, then you feel better about what you do, and everything you do procedurally also gets better.
I see.
So lots of things that people can do. The main thing is go do, you know, difficult things. And I can actually, you know, before we're done, I can actually give you an exercise that they could probably do on their own if they wanted to work on their foundational zombie system.
Tell me that.
So basically, what the goal is to make the brain make very simple decisions harder. So the one way to do that is if they're reading, say, a book. Hold on. First of all, going back to that, making things harder, is one of the problems with cognitive skills nowadays is we rely too much on a digital interface, right? Why do we use our phone instead of a book or a map or anything else? Because it's easy, right? Which is great. We like the ease of technology. But the problem is, if we're doing it in an easy way, we're not working our brains hard. So in the old days, we remembered lots of phone numbers. Now we just look on our phone.
That's right.
In the old days, we would learn how to use a map. Learning how to use a map is a great cognitive exercise. Now we just do Google Maps. And so the best way to do this is to use an actual real book, not read it on iPad. It's a real book that you hold in your hands. And
no audio books.
No audio books for this one, no. That's right. Yeah. Audio books actually aren't bad because the sound part of your brain is very powerful. So
really?
Audiobooks, and when you do an audiobook, you know, you have to kind of imagine what's happening. So audiobooks actually aren't as bad as, but your excellent point, as an iPad. Here's one of the problems with reading like on an iPad is there's no page numbers. If you, what was that guy's name we were reading about? You search, it'll go to it. You didn't take any effort on your part. Whereas if you're reading a book, what is that guy's name? Was it 3 pages back? I think it was on the 3 pages back on the top of the page, right? So you're working on your orientation, or you're just working a lot of parts of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the ways we encourage people to try this, it's actually based on one of the exercises we use, is just read, you know, just read, start to read that page across. The very last word on whatever it is, very last word, read it, but say something different. Like you could rotate through 4 colors, red, green, yellow, and blue. So you're going across, and you know that let's say you're going to go in that order. So that you're reading across, and the last one you're going to say red. The next one down you're going to say yellow. Next one down you're saying green. And so what you're doing is you're still registering in the word, but you're also saying the color, which is a different part of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So you're improving the connection between those parts.
Mm-hmm.
Your brain also starts to develop anticipation, right? As you're reading along, you know something's coming different. Your brain has to anticipate that. And then you also have to, it helps your working memory because you got to remember those 4 colors in order. And so at first this would be difficult, but then with practice it can become very easy. And the only way it's becoming easy is that your brain is changing to handle the load.
Excellent.
So that's a very simple exercise people can do.
That goes back to my old, I'm a retired school teacher, and we used to have something similar that we call paired associate learning. But, you know, I'm thinking about these things you're saying, and I didn't expect this, but when I agreed to have you here, but what I'm seeing is something that I've been thinking for a long time. It seems like this is probably, I know it's PTSD is what you've been addressing and so forth, but, you know, kids aren't getting those kind of hard-thinking skills anymore. You know, I have three of my 5 children are graduate or have been through college and are out and have degrees. And I'm going to tell you something, John, no one of them can spell. And they've gone all the way.
That's right.
They can't spell and they don't know how to sit down and write something on a piece of paper, you know. So to me, those higher level thinking skills. Now, I did hear recently that, and by the way, 2 of those children are school teachers now. I told them not to, but they did it anyway. So anyway, they tell me that spelling is coming back into the curriculum. It's not even a grade that they give for little kids anymore. But I guess my point is that kids just, you know, without the PTSD and all that sort of thing, that they're missing out on some of the higher level thinking skills anyway. So, and that kind of leads into my next question. Who can benefit from this? I mean, can your children benefit from this? And
absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, what you mentioned reminded me of something that I wanted to mention anyway about with kids. So you're right. One of the things that school and schools should go through this too, it's a lot easier to put your kids on an iPad than for the teacher to actually have to engage them. One of the things we realize is that One of the ways to make the brain work harder is engage more parts of the body and the brain. That's why our program is analog. The exercises we use, they're printed out, and they're puzzles or different ways that we use them, mm-hmm. but they're not digital. And so when they engage more parts, because we're analog beings, right? Mm-hmm. That's how God made us. We interact with people, and that really challenges our brain. So one of the problems with schools is this move to digital, which is a whole nother area we could talk about sometime, mm-hmm. the idea of digital dementia. Right. Which could be created.
I noticed that you mentioned that. That's a problem, isn't it?
Oh, it's absolutely a problem. And in fact, I was working with an 8-year-old boy. His mom had hired me to try to help him a little bit, who was so addicted to Minecraft because they played it at school, right? That when they took it away, he would sneak out of the house at 8 years old to his friend's house to play. So the digital targets is very close to the addiction center of our brain. Mm-hmm. But also the digital dementia comes from when you, especially children. Children should not spend too much time on a screen unless they're very actively involved in sports or other things that engage in their body. Because mm-hmm. when they're young is one of the connections you make up until the age of about 7 or 8 are the ones that the rest of your life you build on. And digital dementia was really kind of identified first in South Korea, which is a very connected and digital society, and they found that kids that started on a digital device at a very young age, by the early 20s, had the brains of an 80-year-old. They'd already started to develop dementia.
Really?
But I do want to target, you know, so PTSD is, you know, we think about mostly in terms of vets, and I've worked with many, many vets with it, but mm-hmm. it's actually very rampant in kids in the inner city as well, which is where maybe this, you know, a lot of your population, your interest population comes from. They grow right. up in an area where it's unsafe. Right. It creates PTSD. Now, the good news is we did a pilot at Inner City Chicago School about a year or so ago, and I taught the advisor, it was an experiment, because they didn't want me involved. We wanted him involved, how to do the exercises, 15 minutes a day, 3 times a week, for about 8 weeks. And during that time, this was during the ACT times, their ACT scores went up 3 full points, mm-hmm. which is huge mm-hmm. for high school kids. Mm-hmm. And it's because they're learning better getting grades, their behavior issues went down, and so forth. So when your brain changes physically to be less stressed, right, because it's more focused, mm-hmm. your stress level goes down. It can overcome a lot of those symptoms of poor learning and PTSD. And we work with kids, you know, probably as young as 6 or 7, all the way up to 85.
Well, the thing,
in the mail.
John, the thing that jumped out at me when I was reading through your material is that, you know, you mentioned PTSD, and that always piques my interest, and here's why. I think that some men and women that go to prison, when they get to prison, they're hanging out with the same people that they would have been hanging out yep. with. But there are other people that go to prison, and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to put myself into this category. I had never had a speeding ticket, okay? I had never been in any mm-hmm. kind of trouble, and I did something horrible and ended up in prison, and then so here I was in this environment for 7 years yeah. where every single day, and by the way, you'd be surprised how many people, especially in Texas, find themselves in this situation. But so every single day, you're worried about if you're going to make it through the day. Is somebody going to beat you up? Are you going to get stuff stolen right. from you? Is somebody going to hurt you severely? And so you live that way. And I've talked to some experts about this, some on the air and some personally. And it's my belief that PTSD can come from that experience. I don't think it happens to everyone that goes to prison, but I think there's a percentage of people that go to prison that come out that are shell-shocked. And
absolutely.
And so that's what piqued my interest when I saw mm-hmm. your information. And so we're kind of running out of time here, and I feel like we've just scratched the surface, but let's move on. Tell me, why is this technique so successful? What is it about it that makes it work so well?
Well, it's so successful, I believe, because we are targeting the basic fundamentals of executive function, which, you know, under situations of PTSD and poor growth, education, so forth, and, you know, digital environment, you're not developed. And it's that executive function, the ability to recognize patterns, something as simple as that, anticipation, working memory, making better decisions, and not making good decisions. that really impacts everything we do in life, regardless of what we're doing, whether you're a professional quarterback, you're a Marine, whatever. And the one thing I do want to say about this is I want to give hope to your listeners is their transition is very similar to the transitions that the Marines have to make when they come back from deployment.
Okay.
They're in a completely controlled environment. Now they come back to their home, right? They've got, and if they're getting out of there, they've got to find a job. They've got to transition from a whole new way of thinking, communicating, and so forth.
Right.
And this type of training can really help make that transition much faster and smoother. In fact, I'd be great if the prisons actually put something like this in there to help prepare the guys for when they come out.
Yeah, I totally agree. And if you, when you talk to, you know, say I'm down in Texas, when you talk to people in the upper crust of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, they'll agree with you, but they never do anything. So
right.
And I think it has to do with money more than anything else, but. Anyway, you're absolutely right about that. Wouldn't it be great if your technique was taught to everyone before they were released?
Yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
You're going to get me started. Okay, so when is your book coming out, John?
I've got some articles to write. It's hopefully coming out. By the end of this year.
Okay.
I need to set aside the time to finish it up. I've got plenty of research for it, plenty of results.
Okay.
As you saw from the website, we got tons of results. It's just a matter of putting it into a form and a manual. I'm working on a manual too, so people could actually do this on their own.
And is this just a working title, or is this going to be the title of the book, Zombie Thinking?
Yeah, that's the working title for now.
Okay.
It'll probably be that way. People seem to like that.
Okay.
As I do more, I do a lot of work remotely via Skype or FaceTime, and I'm trying to pull more audiences in and incorporate that into the book as well.
So if people want to find out more about you and this technique, the combat brain training, how would they find you? Are you on the internet?
Yeah.
I know you are. Where do we find you?
Well, best way is just go to the website, www.combatbraintraining.com. Don't forget the brain. If you put combat training, you won't get me.
Okay.
combatbraintraining.com. And there's a question there. And if they actually mention that they heard about me on your show, that'd be great. Is this a form they can follow? And One of the links, as you know, has like a short video and then some different articles and some background information and so forth. But that needs to be updated, I have to tell you. We're working on updating the website as well.
Okay. All right, John. I want to thank you so much for being here today. I think there's a lot of useful information here, and maybe we can do this again sometime and kind of follow up on some of these questions. The forthcoming book working title is Zombie Thinking: Why Do We Do What We Do and How to Improve It. John Kennedy, thank you so much for being on the Journey of Hope today.
Thanks, Rodney. Take care.
Okay. We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Hey, everybody. Hey, listen, 2018 marks the 8th year that I've been doing the podcast. Doesn't seem like I've been doing it that long, but I have. And another interesting little factoid is that there's only, as far as I can remember, there's only been 2 people that have been on the show twice. So every single one of these podcasts have had a new person on there. And hopefully you can find something in these that will help you, give you a little light bulb will go off and give you a little encouragement as you go through reintegration. Those of you that are serious about it and want to get things right this time, and you don't want to go back to worrying about what time chow is and when is commissary, then I guess hopefully I've given you something you can use here. Hey, let me know how you're doing, okay? You can catch me at Mathers Rodney, MathersRodney at yahoo.com. And thanks to my special guest today, John Kennedy. And I want to remind you, as always, that if God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on The Journey of Hope.